Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, February 1st, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hi, Carla and Jim. How are you doing today?
We're doing well.
It's been an eventful week. I'm sitting here in a brand new bed that the care got for me. It's supposed to be wonderful, offloading bed, you know, and it won't settle down. It keeps blowing itself up more with more air and then stopping. It does it about once a minute. I hope you can't hear it. I guess we're going to have to deal with this until Monday.
So it's giving you a ride. Is that it? It's one of those ride.
Yeah, it's got ribs instead of, you know, a mattress, and it blows it up according to your weight so that it distributes the weight of your body throughout the bed. And that is very good for somebody who has to sit all the time. Since I can't walk, I am sitting a lot. So I know it's just going to be great for me, but it's sick.
It's noisy.
It's having problems. We're going to have the repairman out and look at it on Monday. Anyway, what I wanted to tell you was that we're going to have our gathering on next weekend. Of course, we won't be able to talk with everybody next weekend because we'll be busy. But it will be a wonderful time for us. We just have an in-house gathering this time. It's the first time we've ever done it. We got our board of directors, those, you know, who could come, and our biggest volunteers, the ones that really pull for us. And the question for everybody is, how can we serve better? And if anybody's got any ideas, send them in, because that is our one hope in this world, in this life, is to serve better. There are so many beautiful, beautiful groups, you know, that serve and are being directed by Spirit these days. It is so inspiring. And we just, you know, would like to serve to the very best of our ability, you know, where we're planted, and join the beautiful garden of other wonderful sources that are spiritual and inspiring. How about you? What's going on in your life?
Oh,
the weather.
Oh, no, it's been beautiful. Actually really beautiful. But, no, we're starting to get our garden ready for the spring. So, and, you know, getting dental work done. But I feel better having gotten it done. So that's
well, it's you and Jim.
Yeah. Jim getting dental work at the same time. On the same day. How about that? That was wild. So, no, I'm glad to have it behind me.
dental
yes.
health is important.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So no show next week then. Want
yeah,
to make sure
we're
everybody
be totally
that.
In the middle of this staff meeting.
Okay. And if anybody has any suggestions on what you
better?
Talked about.
Lay it on.
Yeah, they can start a thread at bringforth.org, or maybe either Gary or I could start a thread, and that could be the place. We already have a section in the forums, too, at bringforth.org. That's bring4th.org for discussion for the radio show. So that might be a good place. Or anybody
oh, I
can
love
just
it.
Go ahead.
I love it, yeah.
Yeah, anybody can just go ahead and that. Post their suggestions there, and I'll make sure it gets passed on to Carla and Jim. So, all right. Very good. Well, I'll go ahead and move on to our opening riff then. This is from Kuo, June 6, 1993. And I can read this without my reading glasses since I got that infected tooth removed.
Well,
that
hey,
is so
great.
Okay, I want to let everybody know that. If you have trouble, check your teeth. Okay. What is the manner of moving in harmony with desire-driven destiny in such a way as to make the most effective and positive choices? We ask that you recall from one of your holy works that the one known as Peter saw the one known as Jesus walking upon the water. Peter, it is written, was excited to see this miracle and leapt out of the boat to walk to his teacher. But then Peter realized that he was doing the impossible, and immediately he stopped walking upon the waves and began to sink. However, the one known as Jesus reached his hand to Peter, and Peter was again able to walk upon the water with his teacher. This reaching of the hand to the infinite intelligence that is source and ending is an image showing the essence of prayer. It is a direct communication with that which surrounds and makes possible the illusion now experienced. To pray is to organize the energies within the self and point them directly at communication with and ultimate congruency with the great original thought of love.
Thank you, Monica. I was inspired this week by listening to one of the 13 grandmothers talk about her walk in spirit and about the importance of prayer in her life. And I wanted to look for something in our readings that touched on prayer and the deeper how do you pray, the deeper understanding of what that is. And I just pray that I can share with you that inspiration, because it is such an incredibly beautiful feeling to be able to settle down and close off the outer business of the day, which is usually kind of hectic, and just for the moment move into that place where the Creator is as real to us as Jesus was to Peter. And we're so glad to be with the Creator. We leap from our normal vibration into a higher vibration and rush towards that ultimate vibration of love. And maybe we look down and realize, oh my heavens, we are walking on water. We're doing the impossible. We're actually contacting intelligent infinity. And we start to sink. But we have a hand to reach out to the one infinite Creator whose name is always and ever love. It's so blessed to give yourself the blessing of prayer. It doesn't matter how you pray. I knew a woman who worried about everything, and I told her, that's prayer. If you just rename it, you could go a lot further with it. She was constantly concerned for everybody and everything, and her mind was always on, oh, let this happen right, oh, let that happen right, oh, what's going to happen with this person, oh, we need to worry about this sick person, you know, that kind of thing. Well, turn it around. Take the worry out of it. Take the stress. Take the energies of contraction away. I'm not saying you have to do this all your life. I'm saying for a minute, for just this time out of time, give yourself that incredible gift of prayer. You can pray in a very abstract way, I think, by just setting intentions. You can make affirmations. I make affirmations every day. I am ready to be healed. I can be healed. Healing is totally possible for me. And I make that affirmation all the time because of the fact that it's really important to me to be as healthy as I possibly can be. And that affirmation makes me feel so much stronger. Maybe it's setting an intention. Maybe that's a way that you might like to pray. Maybe you say, I set the intention to serve today. I want to serve the Creator with all my heart and soul and mind and strength. I want to serve my neighbors. I want to be the arms of the Creator. I want to be the smile of the Creator. I want to share that love that pours through me when I rest in the Creator. I set my intention to do that today. Or you can just hold the light. When you are in that place where you've let everything go that keeps you from being in harmony with love and congruent with love, if you've taken geometry, you let your vibrations move into that unconditional love that is always vibrating closer to you than your breath. So close. And yet so far if we don't pay attention. Let everything go and focus on love. And hold the light. Be in the light. Be the light. Rest in the light. And if you have a concern, bring it into the light and leave it there. I know, Creator, I know that I, of myself, cannot affect this, nor do I know what your will is, but I give it to you. Dear Mother, Holy Father, I give this to you, and I leave it with you, and no longer shall I worry, because I know you have it. You've reached out your hand to me, and you've taken it. Amen.
Thank you, Carla. That was very, very, very helpful, because I know that's a question that keeps coming up for a lot of people. And I want to let everybody know we did address that a little bit last week. So this is a continuation. Carla talked about prayer quite a bit last week as well, and you can always catch the old shows at blogtalkradio.com/LLresearch. Just click on the archived shows. They're listed there by dates, but there was a lot more on the same topic in last week's show. Okay, Jim, did you have anything to add?
Oh, a little bit there, maybe. I think that each of us has kind of a lifeline to get a feeling for how the prayer is being answered in that still small voice that we heard about so much from most people who are into meditation and into prayer. I think that within each of us there is a little part of ourself, whether it's subconscious or superconscious or higher self, I don't really know. But I know that there's a way of finding out what direction we need to go when we really pray and we ask and we intend that. For me, this little voice has been one of my best friends throughout my life. I've been able to move along my path in what it seems like a fairly steady and dance-filled way, actually. When we ask this this voice what we need to do, it seems like there is a response right away. It's something that's spontaneous within us, and I think it's really a blessing in that it's an avenue towards movement of ourselves in our path. It's a communications line that we can hear an answer to what we've been praying about, what we think we ought to do, and I think it's available to everybody. And I think mostly it's it starts out when we're kids, and if we can keep the line clear there, that it stays with us throughout our lives and helps to direct us. And it's really another part of ourselves, a part that maybe straddles two realities and brings back information from the spiritual realms and shares it with us here in the third density.
Yeah, it's that sudden insight, you know, that sudden hunch that says yes or no. And you can make up the reasons later, but you know what it is you need to do.
Okay, thank you. We actually have two additional questions that came in via email just in the last hour, so I just want to let you guys know, in addition to the questions on the list, we're going to have a couple more.
Okay.
If we get to them. Okay. The first question tonight is actually a follow-up that I wanted to ask a couple of weeks ago when you were talking about death of the personality shell, and I was thinking about how life is so beautiful, and there are so many wonderful things in this reality. I was thinking about beautiful music and art and things like that, and I'm just wondering, do you think those things are included in that list of things that are important enough to carry forward into larger life? Will those things be lost?
Well, I think there's probably a general rule we could apply here, and that is that if the thing that we're talking about matters as much in 10,000 years as it does right now, then we'll probably take it with us. And I'd say that, you know, things like music and art and dance and poetry and, you know, the arts, the things that really inspire us down to the soles of our souls, that we really take those qualities with us. Whether we may remember a certain song or not, I don't know. We may sing a better song, a more beautiful song, and dance a more incredible dance. But I think that those qualities that enrich us here will enrich us wherever we go throughout the many millions of years of evolution that we may have yet before us. So my general rule, though, is if it's, you know, important 10,000 years from now, I think we'll be taking it with us.
And, of course, the beauty of art is that important and is part of what stays. And as Jim says, perhaps we don't remember Vivaldi or Bach or the Allman Brothers or whatever, but we carry the vibrations of how we felt, how inspired we felt. Those vibrations stay. And so I think that in the world of so many things, we can't, you know, grab Tchaikovsky's Second Symphony and take it with us. But we can take with us the way we felt the first time we heard it, or the 59th time we've heard it if it's one of our favorites. And that's, to me, just as good, because we need to stay fresh, as Jim said, so that we can both appreciate the next thing that happens and be free to create without feeling that everything's been said, everything's been written, everything's been danced, everything's been done. So I think that larger life would be awfully crowded if we took specifics with us, but we take the essence that we have become because of the inspiration of these things. I was just listening today to some piano rolls. Have you ever seen those, Monica? They're little wire rolls that librarians know about. It was a way, the very first way of recording, and it was used about the turn of this 19th century to the 20th, up to about 1925, and it began to be outdated then by other things. But it was a legitimate thing, and somebody had gotten a grant to save Gershwin playing Gershwin and so forth. And I was listening to these beautiful, you know, Rachmaninoff playing Rachmaninoff and Ravel playing Ravel, and thinking to myself, I am so glad that somebody recorded that. I get to hear what Rachmaninoff meant. You know, I always wondered what the heck that was, you know, when I heard it. And I never did quite understand the interpretation of it, but when he played it, it made sense. It just, you know, oh, thank you, Lord, you know. But how could I take the specifics with me, really? But I can take the joy.
Okay, thank you. And I didn't actually know that. I was wondering about that, if you could listen to the actual original recording. That's interesting. Okay, this
They're going out, you know, even the tapes are fading. And so you have to have a foundation, get together a bunch of money and I don't know what you call it, but you put them over onto CD to save them. We've had to do that with all of our archives. All of our original tapes, you know, are within 10, 20 years of just not being very good. So I think the redoing project is done now, and all nearly 1,600 of our tapes are on CD. So our archives are safe. But it's quite a project, and I think it's all worth doing, for sure.
Oh, definitely. You have to remaster all that stuff now because the old tapes will degrade, so they've got to be converted. So, okay, the next question is from Cyan. Theoretical, this should already be in the material, so if this was answered previously, please point me to the podcast. How do fourth density positive and fourth density negative groups communicate with each other if no fifth density or higher or third density or lower groups are available as an intermediary? Since interactions would inevitably depolarize both, how would such an interaction be carried out? If the question's too abstract, please ignore. It links to the fourth density learning of how to hide from third density for the first 100 years of fourth density. How would fourth density positive and fourth density negative entities who intentionally wish to communicate go about doing that? Now, if I've gotten this right, and I hope I have, it would happen so that one would be STS and the other STO, and they would switch polarities in quick succession so that first STS asks the question and STO answers, one intakes, the other puts out, and then it shifts so that one asks and another answers. And is that how fourth density work is done between opposite polarity by fourth density entities who both wish to maintain their own polarity and increase polarity if possible, but maintain working relations at all costs if polarity increases are not possible? If I'm right, fourth density STO and fourth density STS are able to communicate without trouble with one another. This is from Cyan.
Okay, Cyan, thank you so much. There is indeed no problem with them communicating with each other. However, Ra describes the tendency of early fourth density positive and early fourth density negative to repeat third density patterns. And the holy war that Michael in the heavens, you know, that you've heard so much about in so many different ways, in so many different holy works spanning all the world religions. They talk about the war in heaven. This is what they're talking about. Fourth density feels that they must fight fourth density negative. Fourth density negative feels they must fight fourth density positive, and so the battle is joined. And fourth density positive fights until they've lost all polarity because, you know, they're fighting, you know, and they have to give it up. But there are always more to join the ranks because people haven't realized yet that they do not have to resist evil. And the same thing is occurring with the negative fourth density, where they realize, you know, we don't have to fight here. They can go their way. We can go our way. This isn't actually our problem anymore. We have too much information, and if we pay attention to the information, we just need to focus on increasing our own polarity, and we don't need to fight. So, you know, one always hopes that, there will come a time when that war in heaven will cease, but it never has yet because of the fact that we have so many people graduating into fourth density still with the feeling of the need to fight evil. And it is, I guess, because of the fact that we are polarized and because of the fact that in many ways we do have an adversarial relationship towards evil. And really it's a mistake, but it's a mistake that is very easy to make. So that's one way that fourth density positive and negative communicate. And you are correct, Cyan, in that they lose polarity and then have to, you know, limp home and get it back together again. But for the most part, the needs of fourth density have to do with increasing polarity. So they're not much interested once they get it together to realize that. In the other polarity, they've made their choice, they're going on, and they simply want to increase polarity. And, of course, it's a challenge. It's a very real challenge once you get into the higher realms and nothing is hidden and you are integrating your shadow self, you know, like mad for a long time.
During the raw contact, Don at one point seemed to be very interested in figuring out how we could be of service to the negative fifth density entity that wanted to end the raw contact, be of service short of giving the entity, you know, control of the raw contact or taking Carla's life or something like that. And after a couple pages of questions and answers, we never really figured out why Don was so interested in this, but basically the response from Ra was that eventually you realize that the entity is not going to change your point of view, and you're not going to change that entity's point of view. So what you do is you bless each other, and you go your own way. And I have a hunch that without a battleground such as planet Earth to draw positive and negative forces together, that they really don't do much communicating back and forth because they see the futility of it. At some level, they eventually see, well, that, you know, let them go do what they're doing. We've got other things to do over here where we're going to actually benefit from it. We're going to gain something. So I think that without the third density intermediary, there's probably not a lot of communication between the two until once we reach mid-sixth density, then there's the reversing of the negative polarity, and they again join what we see as the positive polarity, and both go forward unified without polarity.
Isn't that something to imagine? That's always been the promise of the raw contact, is eventual lack of polarity, and simply all is one. And that's an incredible reality to ponder.
That was one of the most profound things when I read when I first read The Law of One. I remember I found that so profound. I'm like, oh my God. And I was so relieved to find out that there was not going to be this perpetual battle between good and evil forever.
Yeah.
It really gave me a lot of peace to read that, I remember. Okay, thank you. This next question is from JWS1970. Carla, you stated in Chapter 1 of The Law of One, 101, The Choice, that people only had until 2012 to make their choice toward service to others in order to be harvestable. Now that it's 2013, do you still feel that that is the case, or do you think you were attempting to address the meme that was continuing to build around 2012 at the time? And then a related question on the same subject from Akar. That's a very good question because it's something that I've sort of been thinking about in the last few months. If people have not chosen a polarity by the winter solstice of 2012, are they supposed to already be marked to repeat third density after they leave this incarnation and move somewhere else? What kind of life mission will someone have who still has 50 years of life ahead but has not polarized by the end of last year? On the other hand, those who are already polarized, who are certain that they will go either towards a 4D STS or a fourth density SDO, well, what's next? I guess their mission is now to help increase the fourth density energies from the non-physical planes into the physical Earth, or at least help clean the remaining third density STS energies anchored in the planet.
In a way, I guess I was encouraging people to the very limit of my ability to encourage people to make that choice. Make that choice. Please make that choice, would you? Make the choice. And what happens after fourth density light has taken hold and all of these wonderful shifts have happened and information and energy is just pouring in is simply that it's harder. It's so much harder to make the choice because you have so much information about your shadow side and you wonder, can I do it? You know, can I really do it? Because I feel, you know, that I'm not really positive. And you're seeing all this stuff, and you don't really know what to do about it. Whereas with third density light, you were more naive. It was more simplistic. The light didn't hold so much information. And it was easier to have faith. It was easier to believe that you were going to be able to make that choice and make it stick and make it stick for all of your life. I definitely feel that we still, of course, can make that choice. I simply sympathize with everybody as they go to make that choice and deal with a good deal of angst within themselves. You know, am I able to do this? Can I hold this? And yes, you can, and of course you can. And what I intended was it would be so much easier if they had chosen earlier. Now, to address the question of what happens next, if you've already made your choice, it doesn't simply end when you make your choice. That's the first step. Then you make the choice again and build on that polarity. And you make the choice again and again and again. And gradually, you solidify that choice and make it the way you live. When you first make the choice, it's like, I think, the seed parable in the Bible where, you know, some seed falls on shallow ground and it springs up, but it doesn't have any place to set its roots, so it falls down. That's what you have to watch out for after making that choice and being so excited and so joy-filled. The problem is there will come a day when you are knocked completely off of that energy into energies of depression and difficulty and suffering. And then what? Then can you have the roots of faith in yourself and in your choice to continue behaving as if this is what you believed? Because it's a matter not only of making the choice, but living the choice. You know, I think that it's the most difficult thing in the world to live a very high ideal. If anybody walked around behind me and took notes, they would see me falling away from the loved one a dozen times a day. I hate to say that, but it's true. Something will happen, something will cause me to waver, and I don't even know I'm doing it until it's done. Somebody will say something to me and my reaction is not what it should be. I'm very vulnerable to feeling unworthy. There are all kinds of reasons that I can lose that glow, that radiance that I love to feel and I love to share. And the question then is, all right, here you are. Where are you going? You know, how's this working for you, as Dr. Phil would say? Well, are you going to get back up on that horse and ride some more, please? Because this is really important. So you make the choice as you spiral upwards. As you learn, things become more subtle. And you are given choice points that are more complicated. So your choice meets you where you are. It's not simply a static, okay, made the choice, got it, done, thank you very much. Although it would be lovely if that were the way. But the truth of it is, it's not. Not only do you make the choice, then you make it again and again and again. And each time that you make it is really, really important that you make it, you know, with your whole heart. And solidify and get the habit of those choices that have forgiveness in them and, you know, forgiveness of yourself as well as forgiveness of others, that have compassion in them, that have a strong feeling for justice, that have open-heartedness, joy in them. You know, these qualities are precious. And they come to us not because we earn them as much as because we intend to earn them. So we have to keep intending. We have to keep stating our intention. I intend to serve. I intend to be full of love. I mean for my smile to be real. I mean for my words to be real. I mean to be a woman of honor. I mean that my word is my bond. All of those things that are connected with living impeccably in fourth density values in the middle of a third density world that is tattered around the edges and definitely is not at all impeccable. It's very, as the old word is, it's peccant.
I hadn't heard that word before. Is that really a word?
It's really a word.
Huh.
And as you would think, it means full of error.
I'll take your word for it. You're a librarian. You know those words.
I love to read.
You said something profound. Well, you said a lot of things profound. But one thing in particular about... Oh, what did you say? Something about the works. It's not the works. It's your intention.
Mm-hmm.
To. Okay. I don't remember exactly how you said it. And it made me think about coming from Christianity, the old school, well, the traditional Christian denominations. I was brought up Catholic, and a lot of emphasis was put on works. And then later, the what they call the non-denominational or evangelical Christians really went against that. And they emphasize all the time that it's not about your works. You know, they say all you have to do is accept Jesus as your Savior, and it doesn't matter what you do because you can't earn your way to heaven, which kind of goes against, you know. And then there's karma, you know, those philosophies that deal with, mm-hmm. again, you know, good deeds. And I hadn't ever heard it put the way you just put it, that it's not the works, but neither is it that the works don't matter at all or that you should just do nothing and it doesn't matter what you do, but there's a third option, which is your intention.
Right.
And that struck me as really, really astute, very profound concept. Can you elaborate on that a little bit just to make sure we all get it?
Well, we're living in the density of choice, where we don't know for sure what the right thing to do unless we start getting into these areas of the intuition, the subconscious, that still small voice, and so forth. So all we could really do that has the full power of our character behind it and really shines us as a spiritual being is to try, to intend, to desire, and to set that energy behind whatever it is we do, realizing that we can't know for sure. We're not wise in this density at all. We're trying to be loving. You know, wisdom is way beyond loving. Then we're just trying to the love here. And so we can't know for sure what's the right thing to do. We can get these inclinations. We can get these directions. And we can travel that path. It's a path that, it's just like we started off with the opening riff. We're sort of like walking on water. And our faith is carrying us along. And so that faith, that intention, that desire is the energizer for our journey. And when we get into the fourth density and we have the veil between the conscious and subconscious removed, then we begin seeing what really results from our actions. And we can have a real good idea about whether or not a certain action is going to work. So that's why we're so much more able in third density to polarize here so much more quickly. I think Ross said it was 100 times quicker in the third density than it will be in the fourth density. Because in fourth density, it's like we already seen the cards in everybody's hands. We know how it's going to be played. And we don't have the same ability to gain from an action that we do here, because here we're operating within a certain kind of darkness with just a little bit of light from our faith and our intentions to light the way.
Remember what Ross said at the very beginning. I real quick looked up lawofone.info to get this quote. Ra says, "What thoughts did you think today? What thoughts were part of the original thought today? And how many of your thoughts did the creation abide? Was love contained and was service freely given? You are not part of a material universe. You are part of a thought. You are dancing in a ballroom in which there is no material. You are dancing thoughts. You move your body, your mind, and your spirit in somewhat eccentric patterns, for you have not completely grasped the concept that you are part of the original thought." You know, all we can do is think the best we can. I intend, I affirm, I put everything in myself behind this, and I will follow this into life as best I can. And then, you know, maybe you do, maybe you don't, but you do it again and again. And each time that you do it, it solidifies your vibration. It solidifies your polarity. It takes you further than you have been before. And you don't really know or see this, but you know, the people around you see it. The people around you talk about you in a different way because of the fact that you really are focusing on being loving. You're focusing on dancing in a loving way. I love the thought of dancing in a ballroom where all of us are just thoughts. And you know, what thoughts did we think today? Were our thoughts filled with love? Did we think to serve? You know, it's just such a simple question. But it gets right to the heart of things. Can we bring our distortions down towards love? Can we let some of the things that are not going to ever equal or be congruent with love, can we let them go? Can we let judgment go? Can we let anger go? Can we forgive? You know, these are questions that are so hard to answer because, doggone it, it feels so good to judge. and it feels so good to be right. And, you know, you can just fool yourself and pull yourself right off the vibration of love so quickly. And in our culture, that is encouraged. No kidding. So you really have to think for yourself.
Thank you. I think this was a pretty huge thing. So I think this show ought to be transcribed. I think people are going to get a lot of value out of what you guys just said. I really do.
Well, thank you. So I might mention that to Harry.
Yeah.
Okay. We got two new questions that were submitted. I think we're probably only going to have time for one, but if we don't get to both, we'll... yeah, We'll have one in the queue for next time. And just a reminder to everybody, no show next week. We will be back in 2 weeks. Okay, so here's the question from Karen. When there is a healing of a past trauma, obviously the trauma of the event is changed in some way. In what ways is the trauma changed? And this is really the question I would love to have answered. Since there are obviously good things that come out of trauma, how is it that they remain? I have a friend who's a genius, which is not unusual with severe trauma and dissociative disorder, formerly multiple personality disorder. I've seen this before in my work. I assume with healing, the genius would remain. I hope so, because it is to the world's benefit. Thank you for answering my question. This is from Karen, and Karen has been in the chat room. So, Karen, if you have any follow-up or clarification or comments, please feel free to go ahead and put that into the chat room.
Okay, Karen. Yeah, I've thought to myself often how remarkable it is that so often the disorders that are extreme are also disorders that offer brilliance, absolute brilliance. Remember Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man and how he could do all kinds of things with numbers and tell you a huge number, a huge division or multiplication, bam, right off the bat, and he'd be exactly right. There are really people like this, and there are really people that are geniuses, and the genius seems to be a part of the dissociative disorder. I think the trick would be in retaining the focus and the intensity of personality while healing. I think that there are times when dissociative disorders are a reaction against an unacceptable reality, an unacceptable present reality. So there is a movement into another reality which is more acceptable. And that reality, of course, needs to be held with more focus, with more intensity, because it's the one that is made up. And so in order to create it as reality, it needs that brilliance. It needs that éclat, that focus, that incredible focus. And I think the challenge would be in being able to help the person that is being healed to retain the desire for that focus without needing the alternate reality. Does that make sense? Jim, what do you have to say?
I would agree with what you said. This is a pretty difficult subject. I think that sometimes when there is a trauma that causes such a radical departure from the consensus reality, that the refuge that is taken elsewhere is, there's a certain sort of, I don't know if you'd say a comforting feature in that, the brilliance of the mind able to do things that it was not able to do before the trauma. I don't know for sure, but I have a hunch that when the healing is able to take place, if it is able to take place, that you would probably lose those qualities that we would see as being such a brilliant benefit to mankind, because they've been a part of a reality that was built as a defense, and when the defense is no longer needed, then the entity begins again to partake in the consensus reality as what we would see as a healed person. And that healing would, of necessity, also result in the losing of those qualities that we'd like to see stay.
Yeah, I remember years ago, there was a fellow that worked in a mental institution, and he was, or considered himself to be a nihilist and a magician, a black magician. He was a charming fellow. Very interesting fellow. He took himself lightly, and so it made it possible for me to take him lightly. And he thought that it would be wonderful to take all of this energy that people have in these alternate states and use them for whatever, you know, whatever his goals were, not their goals, but his goals. And I remember storming at him and railing at him. How could he possibly consider, even begin to consider, using something that was the product of pain and suffering? And of course, he saw no problem with it because he did not have that feeling of all of these people as souls. He saw them as pawns to be manipulated, because that's the whole core of service to self. So, you know, is it possible to retain that brilliance? I think it's possible. But I think it would take an incredibly adept healer to convince the person to share a vision with that person of a life that was consensus reality, but worth focusing on. That's the problem.
Okay.
You know, is the consensus reality that we all know and love worth focusing on? So many people, Monica, feel that it's not. And I think if we could just encourage one thing, it would be for people to take, goodness, to take take their worth and realize it. Realize that it is only in people, it is only in the consciousness of one person, that living, that thinking, that all of this exists. Animals can't do it. Rocks can't do it. The sky can't do it. The wind can't do it. We carry life, and we are so important. This is the incredible value of each human soul, and we're one of them. And it's so hard to realize that, because we get up in the morning and we look out the window. It's a dull day. It's a gray day. We're going to work, which we may or may not like. We have got kids or we don't. We have got a mate or we don't. We have got problems with the work or problems with the mate or problems with the kids, or we are just tired because we work all the time. We come back. You know that funny joke about how a guy says goodnight and goes to bed. A woman says, I think I'll go up to bed. And on the way, she washes the dishes. She does the laundry. She checks on the kids. She locks the doors. You know, it takes her a good half hour, 45 minutes to get up to her. And, I mean, you just work all the time. And, you know, when can you stop and realize your worth? But it's so important to realize the splendor that you are, the glory that you are, because you are dancing and nobody else. Nothing but people, nothing but consciousness can dance.
Okay, wonderful. Karen says, yes, that makes sense. Hoping that if there is healing, the genius will remain. The parts blend, so that is a real possibility. Thank you. That was wonderful.
Mm. Well, thank you very much. We okay. We ask everybody to pray. My original text, please pray with us as we go into this next weekend. It means so much to us. My life and Jim's life are completely wound up, bound up. And we wouldn't have it any other way in L&L Research, in this information we've been given and in sharing it for free with everybody, which we do, you know. But now that we do that, what else? More different ways to share, create a game, you know, of living the law of one. Create more happenings that teach parts of the law of one. I mean, there are so many ways, you know, getting grandiose. If I were a little healthier, I would love to just do a love tour and go all over the world and talk about love and help people to make that choice. You know, there are so many ways that you could focus your energy to make more of a service. How can we serve better? But in another way, we realize that, you know, deep down, the best thing that we can do for LNL research is continually to attempt to strive to be a more realized, high vibrational person. And that doesn't show, and that never will. So it's just such a gorgeous question for us to be able to ask at this point. We have the funds for a couple of years. People have donated enough that we're able to say, okay, what can we do? Instead of saying, oh my gosh, we got to do another money raising thing because we have to pay, you know, the printing costs on our books and we have to pay for these websites and we have to pay for people like Gary and our bookkeeper and somebody to clean up and, you know, I mean, just there are things that cost and we have to pay our bills. And up until recently, that was a big issue for us. Now, it may be again, you know, you never know. But for right now, we have this capacity to stop a minute and say, what can we do to serve better? So everybody, pray with us, think with us, and if you get an impulse, please write it down, give it to Monica. I know she'll start a thread and get this going because we want to hear from you. You are the people we are attempting to serve.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Carla and Jim. And yes, I just made a note in the bringforth.org forum in the section for posting questions for the radio show. I made a note about tonight's show, and if anybody has any suggestions, please go ahead and post them. We'll start a new thread on that. So we are out of time, and you guys, I will definitely be praying, and I know a lot of other people will. I hope everything goes wonderfully next week.
Thank you so much.
And, yeah. And so just a reminder, no show next weekend, next Friday. We will be back in 2 weeks, which is the 15th, February 15th. We'll be here at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Check out llresearch.org. Check out the vast amount of material there. There's the Law of One material. There's channeling transcripts, publications, interviews, and lots more. And, of course, bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org. And we'll be here next week. And Carla and Jim, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.